This episode of the Outdoor Life Podcast is brought to you by Brownells. Our test of the best new rifles and handguns is the single biggest project that we do at Outdoor Life each year. During a full week at Gunsight Academy in Arizona, we shoot thousands and thousands of rounds through the most interesting new firearms to hit the market. And amid all of this range testing, trends and revelations begin to emerge. We gain insight not just on individual guns, but we also get some hints about where the firearms industry is headed. I'm Editor-in-Chief Alex Robinson, and for the next two Outdoor Life podcasts, we're bringing you interviews straight from the gun test. In this episode, I'm talking to our shooting editor, John Snow, staff writer, Tyler Friel, and industry veteran and gun team member, Matt Foster. And here, we'll be talking about a resurgence in lever-action rifles.
All right, so we are here in the desert at Gunsight in the middle of the rifle portion of our 2024 gun test, which, you know, if you listen to this podcast, you know this is like our biggest test of the year. We get in all the new rifles and handguns to shoot for over the course of a week. And you, Jon Snow, want to talk about lever guns. Have you gone full FUD on us? Like, what is this?
Okay, well, for one, I have never not been a lever gun guy. You know, I, you know, kind of cut my teeth hunting deer in the Northeast and in Michigan. And, you know, back in the day, not that long ago, lever guns ruled the roost. And so, you know, my first big game rifle was a Marlin 336 and 35 Remington. And, you know, I've just been in love with the platform for the same reason that so many of us are. You know, in terms of the nostalgia, the imagery with the West and cowboys, and they're flat out effective and super fun to shoot. So that said, you know, it wasn't that long ago. I'd say, you know, maybe 15, 20 years ago that, not that the lever gun platform seemed like it was on its last legs, but it definitely was kind of just sort of a musty, old, sort of yesterday's news kind of deal. And that's not the case at all.
Yeah. Tyler, would you call this a lever gun comeback, what we're seeing this year? Which we'll get into the details, but what do you think about the field and just what you've seen in the last couple of years in terms of lever action rifles?
I don't know. I guess some people would probably call it a comeback. I don't know if they ever really went away, but certainly a little bit of a resurgence, like in some new, you know, kind of revived interest that maybe wasn't there, you know, when Marlin kind of teetered and went away basically with the bankruptcy of Remington, kind of just weren't there anymore, you know, Marlins. And that was really for common lever guns. That's what there was, you know? So, I mean, I would say maybe a little bit of a comeback. That would be accurate to say. You're seeing a lot of ingenuity.
Yeah.
You're not, you know, creating new things really, but there's a lot of variety and manufacturers that are making stuff, coming out with stuff that, you know, I didn't expect to see. So it's cool. I mean, I think there's reviving a lot of the stuff that has kind of been forgotten. I mean, the 4570, which spent a lot of years as being basically non-existent, antiquated, and was brought back and is probably more popular now than it ever was, if I had to guess.
Yeah. Before we get into the new guns, the new lever action rifles, and kind of the comeback that you're talking about, let's go to the dark times a little bit. And Matt, I don't want to put you on the spot. Well, actually, I do want to put you on the spot.
Oh, good. That'll be fun.
Will you tell us your Marlin SBL story?
I will, but first, you know, I think I want to add to the comeback and, you know, the part of the dark times for Marlin. And, you know, I think as much as a comeback, and it certainly has been a comeback with Marlin from guns that weren't doing so great under Remington's ownership to them just going away for a while. So certainly that constitutes a comeback. But there's also been a resurgence with a lot of new shooters that weren't previously into lever actions and really I don't think ever had been exposed to lever guns. But with some of the newer guns that have been introduced, it's really appealed to them. So as much as a resurgence, I think it's actually really seen a dramatic expansion of the market for lever action rifles. And I think you've seen that now with, you know, Smith & Wesson introduced the liver gun, which I might be, you know, jumping ahead here, but who thought that was going to happen? And then you've seen some of the introduction of lever guns based on, you know, AR platforms, for gosh sake. So I think there's an incredible expansion of, you know, the shooters that want the fun and versatility of lever action rifle. So,
okay, quit dancing around it. Take us to the SBL story we've all been waiting for. You're like the father of the SBL.
Yes, the father of the SBL. So when I was at Marlin, I was director of marketing at Marlin just before Remington's acquisition. And so one of my first Marlins, I actually bought a guide gun before I even thought about even thought about working at Marlin. So had always loved the platform, had always loved the gun. But one of the things when I became director of marketing at Marlin was you get information from consumers and dealers and everything else. And, you know, really there were just some attributes to the lever gun or the guide gun that people consistently asked for. So, you know, it seemed pretty easy that, you know, people wanted a full length mag tube. They wanted the pistol grip stock instead of the straight grip and, you know, wanted the black and gray laminate. We didn't have it in the line though. So I thought, well, let's go ahead and make one. Well, I put together, spec'd out what this gun should be and went to the other executives and, you know, sort of made the case. And I mean, I wasn't laughed out of the room, but was, you know, basically told that no one will pay that much money for a Marlin. Nobody wants that. And yeah, pretty much, you know, forget about it, go away and, you know, don't ever, you know, we can't wait to never speak about this again.
Get back in your hole.
get back in your hole and, you know, go book some ads or something and, you know, get out of our hair.
Now, not to, you know, giving this a little context. I think part of the dynamic at the time was, you know, when I was growing up and coming of age, and Matt, you're in the same thing, you know, the cheapest gun you could find, cheapest deer gun was a 94 or 336. You know, those were typically like the entry level guns. So you had that kind of expectation, cultural expectation of the price point pressure. That said, it's not like the souped up lever gun came out of nowhere. There was definitely a very active subculture, which you were aware of. So whether it was through Brockman or
Grizzly Guns or
Jim West.
Yeah. And
there were these two, that other camp was already extant. And, you know, you wanted to lead the powers that be
down that road.
Yeah.
Yeah. Marlin, that's a good point. Marlin, really, other than the only expensive guns Marlin had were the really nice or fancy ones, you know, the really ornate cowboy guns or something like that.
Like a commemorative sort of.
Absolutely. Yeah. They were not thinking about lever guns as a high performance platform. Actually, I mean, to Marlin's credit though, their introduction of the guide gun, you know, that was a brilliant move. And that actually, you know, really to a certain extent kind of started getting some of those high performance shooters for the people that wanted the 4570 smash mouth in your face. It was a short barrel compared to what Marlin made for everything. You had a little 18.5-inch barrel. So, but then they just kind of didn't do anything with it after that, right? Just, okay, we got the guide gun. We're done. That's our performance, you know, performance machine. So as a matter of fact, I had referenced these three other gun makers as an indication that the market for those guns was in fact there. I literally said that these guys or companies are making a living off of taking our gun, doing all these modifications to it, and the customer has to provide the gun. And they were still charging almost $1,000 for it. So, but again, you know, they were used to 336s sold at Walmart and so forth and just couldn't fathom it. The only thing we had that was sort of performance oriented was the XLR. And I'm not sure if you remember that gun, but it was a long barreled lever action and it coincided with Hornady's introduction of Lev Revolution, which was actually part of the comeback of lever actions. Got a lot of notoriety, a lot of attention. Definitely extended the range a little bit. Didn't turn into a long-range rifle by any means. I mean, not even close. But it was fun. It made a big difference. Well, I looked at that and thought, well, look at that. That XLR is basically about halfway to being the gun that I want. So after the meeting, I requisitioned out an XLR. And the XLR had the gray laminate stocks. Had a regular lever loop. Had to figure that out. But it was made of stainless steel, which is what I wanted, and had a long barrel. So I thought, well, it's easier to shorten something than lengthen a barrel. So requisitioned this out, and I took it to R&D. They'd heard about the meeting and weren't necessarily thrilled when I walked in with this, you know, with this gun, because they knew exactly what I wanted them to do. So we, in fact, cut the barrel and took a cowboy action mag tube, which I think like, you know, 24 inches long or something, and cut that down. Had to send out to Electroless Nickel because we didn't have any stainless steel mag tubes that were long. So I had Electroless Nickel. So that was one thing about the prototype. The mag tube wasn't stainless steel. Got a large lever loop and called my buddy Dave Biggers at XS Sights. And he sent the rail and the sight and the front sight and basically put this thing together. Well, at the time, I was pretty active on marlinowners.com, which is still present. It's a great, great website for Marlin owners, you know, forum and, you know, groups and so forth. And I'd promised them pictures of a new prototype guide gun if I was able to get this thing made. So I took a couple pictures in my office. I still have those original pictures. Did a little rough Photoshop job just to give it a white background. And, you know, I got the post ready. Said, hey, guys, as promised, here's the prototype guide gun. Let me know what you think. And so I sat there and contemplated for a moment. I wrote the post. And I said, my finger hovering over the, enter key. And I thought, yeah, why not? Go ahead and pull the pin out of the grenade, see what happens. So went ahead and hit enter. I don't think it was probably more than, 15, 20, 30 minutes and my phone rang. And it was Bob the president. He wanted me to come see him. And I thought, oh, I probably have an idea what that's about. So
you're like, I'm getting a promotion.
Yeah, I'm getting a promotion. Well, fortunately, he didn't say, can you come to my office and please bring everything in your desk with you? So I figured I wasn't too bad a shape, but so I did go in, and of course he basically asked me what I had done, and I said, "Well, I don't know. And he's like, "Yeah," he goes, "That's not good." So apparently, as soon as that thing hit the forum, switchboard started lighting up. Dealers were calling in asking where they could get it, and consumers wanted to know where they could get it and how much. And I'd have to go back and look, but I think that particular thread on MarlinOwners.com has the most like subsequent pages of, any post, or at least certainly way up. There's like up to 35 pages of, responses.
It went viral.
It went viral. Yeah. It went viral. This is before social media. So, So I'm almost 65, retiring soon, but, so that's basically it. There was resistance with Remington to making the gun a little bit, but yeah, I mean, they kind of knew they had to.
Yeah.
There's just no way they were going to get out of that one. So there's one thing that's interesting about the SBL is there's a fortuitous mistake on the prototype that made it in production. So when I'd spec'd out the gun, I wanted a full-length mag tube. I wanted that combat shotgun look. I mean, that mag tube ran right to the front. Because nobody was really using suppressors back then. And there certainly weren't suppressors readily available for the 4570. So that wasn't even on the radar screen. I wanted the full-length mag tube. Well, when they were making it, and the way they cut the dovetail for hanging the mag tube and putting the excess sight on and so forth, they basically left that little nub of a barrel sticking out. And that made it into production. And how lucky is that, that all Ruger had to do was just thread it.
Yeah. That is a good story. And I'm glad that you got to finally tell it to us. it's also a really good segue to the guns that we're dealing with now. Cause like that energy and like the interest in, kind of adapting this platform for all these different things. Like, I think that's a lot of what we're seeing in the modern lever gun market. So maybe just like run us through some of the more interesting lever guns that we have in this test and, kind of use them to tell the story of like how the lever gun is kind of growing in these different directions for these different purposes.
Yeah. Marlin since the SBL introduction and, through kind of their ups and downs has, put a lot of energy into kind of making like kind of cool kid, lever guns. And we have a great example of that in the Marlin Dark.
Yeah,
that we have now, which is, you always kind of wonder when people start kind of accessorizing guns in different ways. Like, is it going to hang together? Is it going to kind of work? Is it going to flow? Lever guns in particular are incredibly complicated pieces of equipment in terms of timing and everything else. So it's not difficult to make one go wonky and by tweaks that you might not think would actually have an impact. You know, it's a sensitive platform in that regard. But anyway, this Marlin Dark has this really cool, you know, foreign on it that has a M-Lock compatible. It's kind of all blacked out and it's chambered in 4570. And, you know, it sort of has a much more kind of tactical focus and look. It's got a stock on it that's kind of hollowed out in the back, sort of minimalistic, kind of like the old Ruger, 77s that had.
Yeah, those. A little bit. It's got the cutie sling.
The boat paddles.
Yeah.
The cutie sling cups. Well, one thing that, like, this Marlin Dark, like a lot of their other, well, which started when under Ruger's ownership with the SBL was the first. It's, you know, they're revamping these different lines one by one. And the Remington, under Remington, they had a Dark series.
Had a Dark.
I don't know that it ever went very far, but this, you know, and this one is just like.
Well, and the best stock is polymer.
Yeah.
Which is a first for Marlin for the lever actions.
Yeah.
Yeah, because the old Darks were wood.
Okay.
Still.
Yeah.
Were wood. They were Cerakoted. And they had a number of models. I mean, I'll give credit where credit is due, even though Remington had a difficult time producing the guns. I mean, that's probably being generous or an understatement. You know, in the latter years before, you know, Remington, you know, did what Remington does, they were producing some really, you know, really attractive looking Marlin Darks. They had some were Cerakoted, some tan, some that were, you know, all blacked out. They really did a nice job with it. The gentleman who was at Remington at the time that was basically, you know, growing that line. Fortunately, he was at Ruger. He was one of the good standouts during that time at Remington for Marlin. And so it was really nice to see that they, you know, brought him over for that.
Yeah. So we've got that Dark series kind of, is one expression of this sort of tactical lever gun. Then we've got another kind of like really solid an interesting entry from Smith & Wesson, you know, the 1854. And again, I don't think any of us had a Smith & Wesson lever action on our bingo card for 2024. You know, and for me, the thing that's remarkable about it is that there's nothing hinky or weird about the gun. It's hard to make a new gun under the best of circumstances. And a lever gun is, like I said, particularly complicated. And they have this thing really nicely kind of configured, for general hunting use. They have it in two trims. We have the kind of the rough and ready, less expensive one. They've got a nicer kind of woodstocked version that's sort of a high grade. But, you know, for kind of our purposes and our audience, this is chambered in 44 mag, takes 44 special as well, loads from a side gate, can load from the top of the magazine tube, at least when you don't have a suppressor on it. It's threaded, it's durable, and that's been running well. So that's like a good kind of big woods hunting rig, you know? I mean, so we've got the, you know, the heavier hitting 4570 from Marlin. We've got this 44 from Smith & Wesson. And then we've got, also on the rimfire side, you know, we've got some action there. So Winchester has entered the fray with a new lever gun, this Ranger that's a very inexpensive price point gun. It's a really fun gun with buckhorn sights and everything. Now, as often happens at the gun test, you know, we are pretty rough on stuff. We're hard. We've had
a couple. I feel like I know where this is going.
Yeah, we've had some feeding issues with that Winchester, you know, and again, making guns is hard. You know, this is not unusual. So, you know, that gun, you know, it's not functioning extremely well right now. We put a lot of rounds through it and it's, not working great. So we're pulling it from the test and, you know, we will, give Winchester a chance to kind of address that and, you know, gussy it up, and we'll take a closer look at it when we get a sample that runs reliably. But, so the rimfire side, we've got lever actions. We have an interesting one from Chiappa as well, a takedown 1892 replica that, is kind of a good expression of the gun. It's got a couple little features on it that could use a little improvement. It's a little rough and sharp. See, whereas like the Smith & Wesson, beautifully radius, very comfortable to load, comfortable to run. Mm-hmm. Right. And it actually has the nicest lever gun trigger, like traditional lever gun trigger I've ever felt on a basic production rifle, actually. You know, wow. So Smith really has done quite well. The Chiappa has a little bit more pluses and minuses with it. And we ran the hell out of them this afternoon while you weren't looking.
Yeah. Well, and it's the Chiappa is not threaded, and it's, you know, it's a stainless, it's their Alaska 1892 Alaskan takedown. So like Matt was mentioning, these guys making takedown like Bill West, there was a guy, Ken Corcoran in Fairbanks gunsmith, who I think made a nicer version than Bill's takedown. You know, you'd buy your 1895 and take it to him and he'd tear it apart and turn it into a takedown. And he was building those rifles on a much smaller level. But so this 44 mag takedown, and I don't know, I've seen one of the Marlin reintroduced those at the 1894 last year in 44 mag. Mm-hmm. And you know, I mean, being everyone gravitates towards the 45-70 for bear defense type things, but you know, a 44 mag in a rifle, especially if you know you're picking the right kind of projectile, like it's low recoil, carries a lot of bullets.
Yeah.
And is like pretty substantial, much more substantial out of a little carbine lever gun than it is out of a revolver.
Sure.
So I think that's pretty interesting too. The Chiappa was initially, I was not, you know, when we're doing our accuracy testing, sharp, like shooting it, you know, we're shooting these things standing braced, you know, on a bagged tripod at 50 yards. And it was not a lot of fun to run like that. But after I started offhand shooting it, like really being able to cycle the action hard, I started really liking that gun.
We'll be right back after the break.
In the great outdoors, every detail matters. That's why Brownells offers you, our Outdoor Life listeners, an exclusive 10% discount with code OL10 to get the gear you need to make the most of your outdoor experience. Whether you're hunting, sighting in your rifle, or just plinking on the back 40, Brownells has the products to help you get the most out of every day outside. So, for a limited time, unlock that exclusive 10% discount on your order with code OL10. That's OL10 at brownells.com.
How about Henry by my guys from Wisconsin, Rice Lake?
Oh,
do they have anything in the test this year?
Yeah. So, you know, we have, you know, kind of last year. So we've doing new rifles, new handguns, and we're taking a look at kind of a special look at the rimfire category. So we've got a number of rimfires in there that have been around for a little bit. And so we've got this Henry small game gun with octagonal barrel and a little peep sight on it. And like all of those Henrys, it just runs like a dream. My God, I just...
Nice guns.
nice guns. You just want to, you know, take it into, you know, a stand of hardwoods and, you know, start plinking away at bushy tails. And yeah, no, it's so the Henry, not surprisingly, is running pretty sweet. So we've got a nice mix. We've got a nice mix, and it really shows kind of the versatility of the lever gun platform, sort of, and you know, and its appeal extends to people in all these different kind of end user groups. It's just fascinating to me because, again, if I had been forced to guess as a kid when I was first hauling one around, I didn't have the imagination.
Yeah. In terms of, what are we talking about in terms of accuracy? You know, someone listening to this and, you know, kind of having their eyebrow perked up a little bit on some of these rifles, like, you know, what can a prospective or potential lever action rifle buyer expect from their hunting rifle in terms of accuracy based on this field?
We've had some pretty impressive results. You know, one thing, and you know, there's a lot, obviously we went into depth about the sort of the SBL story and the Marlin story, you know, the development of that lever evolution and that flex tip bullet, you know, that allowed these sort of Spitzer style bullets, flatter shooting bullets, to be loaded safely in a tubular magazine. You know, part of what Marlin did with that XLR series of guns, this longer barrel, is they tweaked a couple things in terms of how the magazine tube hung under the barrel and things like that really helped improve the accuracy of the guns. And honestly, I haven't taken a closer look at the Marlin Dark here, but presumably some of that DNA is carried forward, because we have had some, you know, particularly with a couple groups in that 4570, what like Tyler, the 300.
Well, the Barnes this afternoon, I shot maybe six or seven groups, five shot groups, standing off a bagged tripod at 50 yards with 300 grain Barnes triple shocks. And that thing was just knot hole after knot hole after knot hole. I mean, they're cutting big holes.
Yeah.
You know, and I haven't seen the final tally of what all that and compiled, you know, that to see like what all those 20 shots did. But I mean, every group was just a big hole.
Yeah.
Which is impressive, yeah. Just given the error, you know, standing off a tripod shooting a lever gun.
I had great results from the Hornady Lever Evolution stuff. I mean, it's shooting really well.
Yeah, it's like maybe the right way to measure these, because they're not meant to be precision rifles that we're shooting at 300 yards. But maybe the way to gauge the accuracy is just like whether you're happy or not. You know, after you're shooting your group, just like, oh yeah, that is about what I felt like I should be shooting with that.
Well, I mean, the way I would like, I mean, I think we could get a little more specific than that, because, you know, I think the accuracy that we're seeing, the practical accuracy, you know, from a standing supported position and so forth, I think it is equal to anything that the bullet is capable of doing terminally effectively at whatever range you want to shoot it.
Oh, okay.
You know, yeah. So what I would, you know, so you're going to run out of terminal bullet performance before you run out of precision with some of these.
Yeah.
Is my, if that makes sense.
Oh, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's really quite good. I mean, we're seeing, like I said, a lot of these kind of just big bug hole groups, that beautiful, like, 4570
wad cutter,
cutter thing. They just put the nicest holes in the targets. Yeah. They're just fun to look at.
I mean, it'd be easy to say that translates to like minute of deer, but that's not the case. I mean, they're shooting great, and yeah, you wouldn't run out of accuracy before you ran out of what you wanted that bullet to do. So, cool. Or the ability to hit it because of its trajectory.
Yeah. What do you think about the? Well, I'll just say this, like the tactical lever gun. Is this legit? Like, are these like practical tools, or is this just like a fun kind of side market that, you know, it's cool to be able to put accessories on your lever gun as just like kind of a quirky thing?
Yes.
I think
all the above.
I think there are two answers to that question. Yeah. You know, one is that it's a fun platform that people just enjoy, and they enjoy it sort of in all these different ways, from the rim fires up to the big kind of bear defense kind of thing. And so there is sort of a tinkerer's appeal to the platform in terms of accessorizing, hanging things on, which is, it's kind of its own joy. You know, that said, you know, one of the big advantages of lever guns is that they are a nice gun. They're not an evil gun, right? You know, they're, so you can own them in
evil in air quotes.
Evil, yeah. Evil, evil in air quotes.
Yeah.
I think they're 50 state legal.
Yeah. So it is a gun for somebody that you can have pretty much anywhere around the United States. And, you know, you get one that's tuned up, that has the right accessories. It's an incredibly effective tool. So there is a very practical, I think, element to it too. So the fun and the practicality. And I think that both those things are giving it a lot of energy. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, Matt, you could probably speak to some of the kind of the cooler accessories and sort of things that are.
Yeah. It's changed a lot in the last, even just the last couple of years, between handguards that are available, different buttstocks, you know, quivers for holding cartridges. But it just makes sense. I mean, you know, you think about it, you know, any gun that's used for something other than traditional deer hunting, you know, most people want the option of putting a light on it or just accessorizing. Like you say, people want modularity now, right? I mean, it's no different than, you know, our most popular firearms, AR, 1022, 1911, you know, Glock's not so modular, but actually that's not even the case anymore. And they all share modularity, 870, right? So, you know, these accessories have made lever actions modular. But it's interesting you pointed about the fun factor. I actually took John on a hunt when I was at Marlin, and on all the rider hunts, I would bring lever actions. We did a lot of hunts introducing the XL7 bolt action, And but I always brought lever actions because, you know, you've got to have those around as well. And what was interesting, what I noticed as director of marketing and trying to plug into that fun factor was anytime there was downtime during a hunt, the riders would grab every bit of ammo I brought, grab the lever actions, and go out to whatever ramshackle range the guide had set up to zero the guns and blow through the ammo. Just like we did today, shooting lever guns for fun. Shooting rocks, steel targets, or whatever.
Whoa. Alex wasn't there. Our boss wasn't there. It was work.
Yeah. This is true. This is true. It was scientific. It was getting a feel for the guns.
We have to test the fun factor too.
That's right. But
hit a rock.
But they would never do that with the bolt actions. Bolt actions are great. They're fun to shoot and they're great for what they're for. But you just don't go out and just sit there and, you know, offhand run rounds through one like you do a lever action. It kind of has that, you know, visceral appeal as you rack the lever forward and backward to chamber the round. So I think that combined now with a degree of practicality with the accessories that are available is, in fact, like John said, is what's creating that energy around the entire category.
Well, yeah. I also think that if there's one thing that everybody hates, it's a lever action rifle with ammunition in it.
Yeah,
and people will do anything at a moment's notice
to fix that problem. It's incumbent upon you.
I mean, the other, so that's, you know, one side driving the market for sure. But then the other one, obviously, is the you know, the popularity and growing straight wall hunting cartridges and, you know, all of these Midwestern states and many states in the East allowing straight wall rifles into areas that traditionally were shotgun only zones. So John, you've shot the, you know, most recently the 360 Buckhammer, which I actually, my dad lives in southeastern Wisconsin in like a semi-rural, semi-suburban area, but he's got a little 30-acre farm that, you know, he can hunt on. And I got him a Henry rifle in 360 Buckhammer for his 60th birthday in part because of your review, but also because it was like, you know, just a really practical option for him. You know, he's never going to, at his place, he's never going to shoot beyond 100 yards. He doesn't want his bullet to travel much beyond that anyway. So that combined with like, this is actually just a nice, beautiful rifle to give my dad. It's like, yeah, I wanted to get him a gun and I went through all these different ideas and settled on that because it hit that, it hit the nostalgia, but then it also hit this like practical standard because I want him to be able to shoot it and hunt with it, you know?
I mean, it is a great, it's a lovely little cartridge. I mean, it kind of hurts my heart a little bit because my, you know, going back to my original Marlin was a 35 Remington.
Yeah.
And I just love that round. It's just, you know, that, you know, 200 grain soft point, you know, bullet. I mean, I don't know how many animals that has put face first into the leaves in the woods over the years, but it's done a lot for me. And I just love that. So the 360 Buckhammer, you know, is a different version. You know, it's the straight wall as opposed to a little bit of a bottle that could actually outperforms, I guess, in that sense, the 35 Remington. But what it does do is it uses that same classic 358 caliber kind of deadliest mushroom in the woods, you know, bullet. I mean, that bullet has a great legacy. And so, yeah, from a practical standpoint, and now you get to have a gun that is really pretty because, or just a nicer thing to own versus some of the earlier straight wall guns were kind of like cheaper single shot break actions and nothing wrong with that, but they don't have the same appeal.
Right.
As this. So yeah, I mean, it really, you know, and I try to keep tabs on the trends and everything. And when the 350 Legend came out, I was like, oh yeah, that's kind of interesting. But me being out in Montana, I'm like, oh, that's cute for whoever needs that.
And that, meanwhile, all of Ohio was like, finally.
Yes, exactly.
It's funny because ironically, like I'm in Alaska, even more removed from any need for that cartridge. And I ended up getting like to do all the testing for our team for that cartridge. Right. So I've shot a lot of 350 Legend stuff.
And pretty impressive, right?
It's like shockingly accurate. Now, like that's kind of outside the lever gun because it's got like the recessed, rebated rim. So it's not different. The buck hammer is what is needed for the lever gun.
Right.
But we also can't forget the dirty 30 either. The old 30-30.
Yeah, the old 30. Oh, yeah. Yeah, but no, but the point is that there have been these cartridges have been developed for people in those areas, and they really were craving it in a way where I didn't, I kind of missed the boat on the legend a little bit. Like it sort of took me by surprise. And then, so when the buck hammer was announced, I'm like, I'm not going to make that mistake again.
Yeah.
And I took a deeper dive on it and came away pretty impressed. And I'm like, yeah, I think this thing has legs.
Yeah. All right. So we're here. We're in this nice little moment. We've got all these lever guns are shooting good. Where do you see this going in the future? Like what's kind of the 5-year, 10-year trajectory for lever guns? Because man, like so many other parts of like the shooting world that we live in are just like hyper accuracy, long range, like better terminal ballistics, like trying to like better, faster, more accurate everything. And like, how does the lever gun market kind of stay relevant or keep enjoying this popularity that it seemingly has in the moment?
Yeah, no, I think that's a great question. And, to me, I think one of the things that we have seen in a lot of different ways is that there are certain kind of subcultures and niches in the gun world and in the shooting world that are pretty price insensitive. You look at the amount of money people drop on night vision gear. You look at the amount of money people will put into custom, 2011 pistols, or in the precision rifle world, in the competitive world. I mean, the price tags associated with these pursuits are really intense. And a lot of people, just because they love that pursuit so much, are willing to, cough up that kind of money. I see that same impulse existing in the lever gun market for the people who want to nerd out and take a deep dive. So I think that for people who come up with ideas and innovations, whether it's lever guns off an AR platform or lever guns that feed a different way or have different things, I think that there's going to be an acceptance of those types of innovations and experiments. They're not all going to take. But I think that in terms of a kind of a tinkerer's perspective and an innovation perspective, I don't think we've seen peak lever gun yet.
Oh, fun.
Yeah. I mean, not at all. I don't know. I mean, Matt, you're pretty close to that. I mean, what do you think? Am I wrong? Am I right?
No, I agree with all that. I think that it's not going to just be for the price insensitive crowd as well. And I think manufacturers, I mean, they love to fill a void of demand, right? So, I think, Ruger, for instance, probably will strive to get the cost down. I mean, there isn't any way they wouldn't want to produce a lever action at a price that sold, the volume like Marlin used to. I mean, they might be already, but they know there's demand there for more. And I think that the 4570 has been around, I mean, since late 1800s, right? And it's ebb and flow, but it doesn't go away. And I think when somebody, lever actions have now finally kept up with the trends in styling, accessorizing, that sort of thing. And I think that was the thing that was missing for lever action rifles. You said lever action, you thought Woodstock 30-30 for the most part. That's not what the market wants for the most part. There still is, of course. But the fact that manufacturers have brought those guns into the modern realm, I think they'll keep doing it. I think they'll keep improving the designs, improving the function. Like the dark with the polymer stock. That was actually one of the most common requests we had at Marlin. We couldn't do it, but that was a very common request. That has nothing to do with nostalgia. They still wanted a working tool that had the functionality of a lever action, which is, it points well, it's rapid firing, and it's fun. So a lot of time we forget about the fun factor involved with a firearm, that we get so caught up in performance that sometimes it's nice to just go out and have a good time shooting it. So I think it's just going to continue along that trend, and I think they're not going anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, talking to the Marlin Ruger folks, like some of their challenge is just getting enough of these guns made because the demand for them is so high. So if that's any indication, that's a good sign for things to come, certainly.
Well, and they have an interesting situation in that, I mean, in talking with them, they have incredible demand for the classic stuff. And they're getting beat up for not having enough, you know, blued steel walnut stocked models.
Yeah.
They're also getting hammered for not producing enough SBLs, trappers, and the new, the 1894 you were talking about, and the 44 mag. That's one of the dark introductions. Going to be in the Marlin Dark series, and they already know there's no way they're going to be able to make enough of those.
Yeah.
So, kind of interesting. Two very different markets that are, you know, scrambling for something, you know, beating them up over something that they have to respond to, or they, of course, want to respond to. So,
and you want to talk about fun shooting one of those like 44s, 44 specials with a suppressor on it? Like, it's pretty cool.
Oh, yeah.
And that's maybe the best example of how like the old school lever gun is meeting the new, you know, meeting the new world. You're shooting almost all these guns suppressed.
Whenever possible.
And whenever possible. And that's, you know, and look, let's go back. I mean, what are the things that are common to everybody's experience with a lever gun? They handle well, they're short, they're short barreled, you know, they're quick to bring into play and stuff. We have the ability now to mount lots of optics on them. And you look at the popularity of optics that are designed for not long range shooting, you know, things like the LPVOs and reflex sights and so forth. All of these things tie right into the historic configuration of a lever gun.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they all play in perfectly.
Yeah.
And the suppressor is kind of like the icing on the cake. You know, we've been talking about sort of our ideal situation. You know, Tyler obviously lives up in bear country. I spend a lot of time in bear countries as well. And so it's not a, just sort of a theoretical consideration for us.
I have to say, when you end up shooting a bear very close range in the woods, it is loud.
Yeah.
And so
it's practical to, it's not just fun,
have a can on these things, you know, so it's, you know, and also it makes it cool and it just improves the experience of shooting it. And especially some of these like flow through designs, you know, you can really kind of feel the difference in the recoil impulse in terms of fine tuning the performance of it. So yeah, I think all of these things are pointing to a continued energy, innovation, and interest in lever guns.
Nice. All right. Well, we have to get back to work because the next podcast has to cover everything else. Thanks, guys.
The Outdoor Life podcast is edited by Mike Peterson of 85 Audio. It's hosted by me, editor-in-chief Alex Robinson. It's usually produced by our senior editor, Natalie Krebs, but this week she's off in Australia doing some hunting and reporting for a future podcast. The music in this episode was composed by Pierre Locatelli via APM Music.